So the thing that's, if you just think of it from a kettle of water, we have unreached people groups. It's about 7,000 now globally that do not yet have a gospel preaching movement within their people group. And so we would consider that an unreached people group. So the sign out there says unreached, but I got literally my neighbor that won't talk to me, but her name's Rachel. I got her. Finally, I figured out her name and I'm now praying for her. But Rachel's got me right in the middle of her world, but she didn't like me. So my kids hit their wiffle balls into the yard and that became an issue. All that said, unreached. But what we're talking about today is unreached people groups in the sense of it's not just Rachel, but Rachel and blocks on blocks and cities on cities in which they don't have the gospel representation yet within their people. And so when you have, it's just like a cup of hot water that's sitting there. Until you put leaves into it, you'll never have tea. So until you put the gospel into that people, it will not, it won't, it'll just stay hot water and it will slowly become, you know, lukewarm. But what our goal would be, if we can get the gospel, and it's going to take every group, every church, all, everyone, it's not kind of like, and it's taking the leaves, and these are, oh, this is my oolong that they just bootlegged out of Thailand for me, but, oh, another good one. You could put these leaves, but if it's not in water, it will never unfurl. It won't be any good. Okay, but my buddy that's in Thailand that loves me and wants me to continue to support his ministry just continues to send me tea. It's a good way to do it. So and now each of these are going to taste different. There's going to be different kind of rules to making. And that will be the same. Like so when we talk with Muslim, if we're talking into Hindu areas, there's going to be different rules that are there, different temperature that's there, maybe different leaves that would unfurl. But the goal of it is we've got to have great tea in every one of those cups. And so when we're talking about this today, think of it in the sense of just cups around the world. We got about 7,000 right now unreached people groups. 31 of those are over 10 million people. Okay, and those are what we would call, and we'll talk about it, frontier people groups. And so these may be some new terms, but in the missions community, if I can encourage you in one thing, it's the place and go, we have to first say, Lord, these are valuable to you. It's not meant to be just standing hot water. It's meant to actually become tea. Now, there's a point in which, and like I'll leave this one, if you leave the tea bags in there, the tea in there too long, it becomes a bitter mess. And there are times where a missionary or an organization will overstay its time and will actually make it pungent, make it not palatable. And so it needs to become an indigenous movement. It has to become the gospel in the people, for the people, through those people. And so the necessary part is almost like a bag, and bag would probably be a better illustration of this. At some point, it needs to be pulled out, and it will still be a cup of tea that reaches its own people. So from an illustration side, think of it in the sense of our Foursquare movement. One of the things we're wanting to do is make sure we're getting tea into all these hot cups of water. And our leaders around the world will know, okay, that's a green tea. That needs to be 150 degrees. Okay, that's the 190. That's Kai's favorite Paris blend. We'll put him over there. And the thing is, we find that the Spirit of God will direct his people. So we've called it Macedonian Call. That comes out of Acts, where Paul is trying to go down into Asia Minor, which is later he goes into. But the Spirit of God is the one that resists him. And for all missions people, you're like, you're not Spirit. You're not supposed to resist. Those are unreached people. And the timing of it is where we point to, and we look, and there was a resistance. He recognized that. And then there was a man that came and spoke to him and said, come over here. And that led him over onto the what we know is kind of the Greek peninsula. And he knew with confidence, this is where we're supposed to go. And so the thing is, and we're going to recognize this as we go through this, is what the tragedy is there are whole people groups without any tea in their cup. They're just hot water. And after 2,000 years of the commission being in the church's hands and still not having enough tea to be able to spread out to all the people groups, that's not Jesus' fault. That's the failure on the part of the church. Okay, and so with the Foursquare movement, we're looking at going, we want to be right in the middle of getting into the hardest, most unreached, broken places with the gospel of Jesus Christ that it would remain there. Okay, and so that would be, we call it Macedonian Call. It's a group that we are assembled, but it's kind of like Zoom calls at this point of going, how do we do this? How do we keep unreached people groups right in the front and center of our Foursquare movement? And so I try to apply this first. Like I pastor a local church, my wife back here in Pink. We co-pastor this church, but she usually lets me do all the mission stuff until she went to Morocco. And then she goes, you know, oh, you're Kai's wife, you know. And but when she came back, that passion was in her heart. She goes, there she couldn't communicate outside of hand signals and other things that they're trying to communicate. And she goes, I can do all of that in the United States. So that caught in here. Okay. And so if we can do that through the rest of our Foursquare family, that the unreach is always invited to the table, that is always a part of our conversations. And so Macedonian call, that's kind of our priority that's there. So let me have Eric come. He'll encourage you out of Romans 15. And then he's got a grid up here that you're not going to be able to read because it's written not in Norwegian, but it's from your distance, you're not going to be able to read it. But he will explain it. And then on that bottom part here, categorization by unreached people groups by Joshua Project, I pulled that right off their website. All the next page is that too. So where you have all the colors from red to green, it'll explain that. So as he's talking through this, I want you to kind of get familiar with that grid and take it away, my friend.
Okay, very glad to see you all. We consider you the cream of the crop because you have passed all the workshops and you've entered here. Congratulations, so thank you so much. We also think you are valuable people because you have a passion for something that is really, really central to what we are doing in regards to working with unreached people groups, so thank you so much. So I work as a national leader in Foursquare Norway. I also work in Asia Link. So I go to Asia on a regular basis, focus on unreached people groups. I also happen to be on the advisory board for Joshua Project. So some of the numbers and stats that we're going to talk about today, if there's any questions or anything you wonder about in regards to how it's done and how we do this, then please feel free to ask me. But it's very, very simple. It's not a perfect scientific thing. It's not like they are traveling around all over the world and counting people groups. This is a collaborative effort where we are working together for this purpose, to give you a tool that will help you in your strategizing. Let's go right into the scriptures. Paul, he is working according to three different principles. Number one, when you see Paul is working, you see he's talking about open doors. There was an open door for the gospel, and they went there to do ministry. The second part is what Kai was mentioning when he talked about the Macedonian call, the dream, the vision that God showed him. And that was a leading by the Holy Spirit. That was a second area. His third area you can find in Romans 15. Romans 15, it says from verse 19, so from Jerusalem and all around to Illyricum, I have fully proclaimed the gospel of Christ. It has always been my ambition to preach the gospel where Christ was not known, so that I would not be building on someone else's foundation. Rather, as it is written, those who were not told about him will see, and those who have not heard will understand. This is why I have often been hindered from coming to you. But now there is no more place for me to work in these regions. So here you have several areas that he is working on that is a strategic effort. He says, number one, I've now worked all the way from Jerusalem around to Illyricum. I was in Illyricum just a few weeks ago. That is Albania. Albania received the gospel when Paul was there in late 50, early 60. And in around 300, it was embraced by the gospel until 1400. The Byzanticum was there and it was penetrated by the gospel. Now, after 1400, it became Muslim. And now we almost need to go back and re-evangelize some of that area again, because we see some of these areas where the gospel were present is no more, doesn't have it. I mean, I live in Norway. Our capital, Oslo, have 500,000 people. Church attendance any Sunday, 1%. There will be more people going to the mosque than there will be Christians in a Christian nation. So just for your information about the challenges there. But anyway, he said, I had traveled all around and then I covered this area. And he says, it's always been my ambition, which means he is giving a priority to this. I could have gone many places, but I'd given this as my priority, which means when we look at the world today, there's so many unreached areas and all of this of unreached people groups, it's a matter of priority. It's a matter of strategy. Where do you want to put your effort? You don't have much time. You don't have much money. Where do you want to spend it? And your name could be part of the prophetic plaque here, because the prophetic scripture says, those who were not told about him will see, and those who have not heard will understand. You can actually become one of the future missions heroes who were the one that brought the gospel, or you, or the church, or the denomination that you're working out of in your nation. You can be the first to reach into this area. And when we look at the numbers for Joshua Project, that is revival story. And Kai will share later of some of that progress, or George will share later some of the progress. I'm not going to take his stuff. But we are looking at revival story, really. Some of the areas, like China, where I work very hard, they were totally unreached just 50 years ago. Now, more than about 200 million believers are working in China. And they read the gospel. And they think that they will preach the gospel around the world. Can you believe it? They call it back to Jerusalem. And we're sending them, preparing them, and working. And they say, God has prepared us to do the area between the walls of China and the walls of Jerusalem. We're going to take that part. This is a hard area to work in. This is where the Muslim strongholds, Buddhist strongholds, Hindu strongholds, they're all in that region. They want to do it. They think God has prepared them for this. Paul is saying some of the same thing about him. I worked in these areas. And then he says, I've been hindered to coming from you. That is a priority. I have done this because now this is important. Now this is all done. It's interesting. He says, there's no more place for me to work in these regions. So I move to another one. So that is part of the unreached people group. This is a fairly new phenomenon that has come into in our age in the last 60 years, 50, 60 years, that this has come to our attention. Now, when it comes to, let me give you some illustrations, and this is where my artwork comes out, and you will be amazed, so, but very simple. You can buy it afterwards, or take pictures. I'll sign it. So, unreached today has become kind of a word of, yeah, you're kind of in the in crowd because you're talking about the unreached. Now, let me help you, because unreached is very often talked about as non-believers. As Kai said, his neighbor is a non-believer. Technically, he's unreached. But to keep the words right here is important for us to really be on target of what we are aiming at. So we're not just talking about unbelievers, because non-believers or unbelievers, they are in your nation, but the church is there. So this is the difference. The church is there. If they're doing their work or not, that's a different story. But the church is there. You can reach them easily. The second area is non-believers from other nations. This is what we're seeing now in everywhere of the world. There's a huge migration across the world, and people are coming from other nations. And a lot of churches says, hallelujah, now we are really missional. Now we can reach them in our backyard. Yes, you can. The problem is they're not labeled. You don't even know where they're coming from. You know their nation, but not their ethnicity. So you work with some people because they have different skin color, and then you figure out, oh, they're from the Philippines, which is more than 90% believers. So then, I wouldn't say this, but don't quote me on this, but you're wasting your time because you're working with people who have been reached long time ago, and it's a priority. Where do you want to spend your time and money? Are you want to look at these areas that have no representation at all? So this is good, but the point here also, church is here. We can reach them. They're in our neighborhood. Good job. Now, this is the unreached people groups. These are parts of the world, and you can find them when you look into the Joshua Project, when you look into their stats. They have maps and everything. JoshuaProject.net is a very, very kind of simple thing to find out, and you can be a mission specialist in 10 minutes, and you can know exactly where they are. Today, to make it very simple, it's India is one of the most unreached nations in the world. You would think Thomas went there 2,000 years ago. Why haven't they completed the mission? India is probably one of the most complicated nations to work in because it's not a nation, India. It's a nation of nations. And it has such a multiplicity that it's really complicated to work for between one culture and the next and caste system and what have you. It is really complicated. That is part of the reason. And there are many, My goodness, there are many people there. So there's a lot of work to be done. Now, why are they unreached people groups? Because there are no church. There are no mission there. There's no gospel there. There's no Jesus. First time I was facing this situation, I was in Cambodia, northeastern corner of Cambodia. I was looking forward to finally, this is in the early 2000, finally, unreached people group. Hallelujah, I'm going to preach the gospel. And I was getting ready to preach, and all of a sudden it dawned on me. If I say, Jesus loves you, you know, that's a proclamation you want to start with. I thought, they're going to ask me, so where's Jesus? Did he come with you in the boat? Who is that? Then I thought, all right, okay, go to the Bible. The Bible says, and then I thought, we can't read. What about Bible? We don't know anything about this. So I had to think through, how do I want to do this? And this is some of the challenge. That's why these people here are still unreached, because it's the most difficult areas to work into. That's why we think you came here. This is the most unreached area to come in the hotel. We heard the most distant of all places. You already have proven you have the DNA in you to get here. So we think you are determined to be one of those who are going to be part of reaching the unreached. Now, finally, when it comes to people groups, why do we talk about people groups and unreached people groups specifically? Because people groups has to do with ethnicity. You live in the United States. United States is a state of a nation of states. And in each of the states, there are ethnic people groups. Would you be right? Yeah. And this is kind of our target, because we want to be as specific as possible. We cannot generalize anymore. That's why we're losing, because we are generalizing. We need to be specific. What people groups are we looking for? And this is where Joshua Project can help you to a great degree. There's more than 17,000 people groups totally, and about 7,000 of them are unreached in different levels. These are the different colors you will see on the papers. That's the red zone we're working on. And with the red zone, we kind of have two divisions. We have one, which is unreached people groups, and then we have frontier people groups that Kai will talk about in a very short second. But frontier, this is the tip of the spear. These are the ones that we're focused on. And right now, with the Joshua Project, we're looking at 293 people group, which is about 20% of the world population, but it's only 2% of the unreached people group, because they're large. And you can find all about that in the Joshua Project's papers. So kindly find it there. Kai, I'll leave it to you.
Thank you, my friend. All right. So on the third page there, first question at the top is, state of the Foursquare Church within the unreached people groups, or UPGs. In the 1980s, John Amstutz talked about hidden people groups. Ralph Winter and many of the ones coming out of Fuller were helping to kind of go, this isn't just like India as a nation, but you got many people within that nation. So it went back to ethnic groups, as he was saying. And so for us as Foursquare, a lot of times people would be sent. We were limited a lot of times and how many people we could send due to the general fund and what we could fund with people going. So it generally would top out at about 100 workers and their families around the world at any time. Sometimes I would drop down to about 80, sometimes about 116. But what we strategically did was we said, we want to not have the ceiling be set by just a global budget, but we want to also encourage people to raise support so they can go. And then we're not going to be limited to 100, but that could be 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, and we'll scale with our training and other things as we go. And since they made that decision, I think that was 2005, that changed. It was a lot of heartache for about 5 years, and then I stepped in after that, and I was really grateful they made that change, because all of a sudden we could raise leaders that were called to go, but they may be going to a very specific area. They may be going with a certain trade. And it wasn't limited to kind of like, you're going to have to be able to reach this entire area, or your skill set, you've had to pastor a church for 5 years. It might be a school teacher that speaks three languages that would be a great asset in Namibia. So that shift that took place allowed us to begin to send more and more into unreached people groups. So in the last several years, and how we do it with missionary training, is somebody would say, hey, I feel I'm supposed to go. Sometimes people will know exactly where they feel called. They may have like a neighbor, a friend, a vision, a word of knowledge, something that will be very specific. And we have many of those. And then we'll have others that go, I'm just supposed to go, where's the need most needed? And then you kind of look and you go, okay, where will that fit? And so right now, currently going, we have, and I just put them as blanks because I was still working on the numbers when I formed this, but we have now 80 of our workers are working among, and this is U.S. workers, are working as a primary focus or a secondary focus among unreached people groups. So that might be somebody that's sent into, let's just say, Spain, but working across the border into Northern Africa. That's a primary focal point is that work. That would be one of those 80. But if somebody's, say, for example, going to Cali, Colombia and is working among and really helpful among the youth there, serving with Aaron Hunter, but their main focus is not unreached people groups, but rather helping to encourage the Colombian Foursquare Church, we look and go, that wouldn't be in that number. So that's 80 out of 360 is what they put up on the screen. So it's about 22%. In the last 5 years, we've made it a very consistent part of our training is saying, if you don't know where you're going to go, please consider the unreached people groups. And so we've had more and more people going, okay, I'm not determined where. Okay, if I'm going to go, okay, what language do I need to acquire? What skills do I need? What are the ways I can build relationship that I could go and stay long term? So tea leaves into the water. And some of them, it's kind of like junior high girls going to bathroom. They go in groups, you know, and they won't go alone. But, you know, you put them with four or five friends and they go, let's do this. And so that's also happening, which is kind of fun, watching that happen where they kind of go, I don't want to go alone, but if I'm with a group of people that are learning language together, reaching into unreached people groups, I'm in. So right now it's at 22%, but I think in the last 5 years as I've been studying the stats, it was 47%, 45%, 43%. In the last couple of years, it's almost one out of two are going from the U.S. church into unreached people groups. That's their target and their focus. So I'm grateful because they're looking and they're going, okay, where would the greatest need be done? Now, the reality is it may take a generation to get the gospel to fully get through the whole cup. And it may be, they may just be the people placing seed, and it might be later groups that come or individuals that come or radio broadcasts that happen or WhatsApp groups that touch them. So so that's on the state of kind of where the U.S. Church is at on that. So, Sam, why don't you come and talk us through the next part. So if you hold your – you can go back to the 1 through 5, and those correspond with the numbers that he'll be talking with you about.
Yeah, so there's a couple of different ways we can, as Eric was talking about it, looking at unreached people groups. So some unreached people groups live kind of in his number 2 – where there is already churches. A great illustration of this is Singapore. I lived there in the mid-80s. And the 10-year previous, before that, among the Chinese, there's 3 major people groups in Singapore. You have the Chinese, you have the Malays, and then you have the Tamils and Indians. And the Malays are almost 100% Muslim. In the previous 10 years before I lived in Singapore, the gospel had gone from about 3% to 17% of the population. I mean, just quadruple. And the higher the education, the more people that were actually Christians. But that was almost exclusively among the Chinese. Now, Singapore is a small island, about 26 square miles. They've purposely integrated, so the Malays, the Chinese, the Tamils, they all go to school together. There's English as a common language. But yet, even though they were living side by side, you could count the number of Malay believers on one hand. So it would take an intentional moving out to the Malays. But yet there is an opportunity for them to hear the gospel if a Malay really wants to, because there are churches. They have Christian relatives, or not relatives, but they have Christian colleagues and schoolmates and neighbors who are Christians. And so here where I've talked about these different classifications of nations, so a yellow might be that situation. There's unreached people groups in that nation, but there are established churches. The red nations would be what Eric put as number 3. This is where people have virtually no chance to hear the gospel, not even if a believer from another ethnic group would share with them, because there is virtually nobody in their country that is a believer. So a country like Saudi Arabia. And I just want to encourage you, as we are focusing more and more of sending workers into these red nations, It sounds great, but it's difficult. You can imagine going into a nation where at any moment you could be kicked out if people knew that you were sharing the gospel and the pressure that is on you, that isolation. There is no church for you to go on Sunday and to fellowship with other believers. And this I really want to challenge you is that we can each be involved. Yes, God is going to call some of us to be those who go into these red nations. But there's also an opportunity for each of us to be involved. My mother has been in ministry for many years, and one time she was just having a lot of difficulties and a lot of oppositions and a lot of things were happening, and she was wondering why all of a sudden all this was happening. And she learned about this time that had happened, that this one person who had committed to be an intercessory prayer warrior had passed away. And then after that person had passed away, all this opposition started happening. And then she had this vision, this dream of a spearhead. And so you have an arrow or a spear, but out of that arrow, out of that tip comes the shaft. And the real power in a spear is just not the point, but it comes from the strength of the person holding the shaft. And we have workers who are willing to lay themselves on the line emotionally, physically, spiritually, financially, to be that spearhead into these nations. But without someone holding that shaft, backing them in prayer, backing them just in encouragement so they don't feel isolated, backing them in support. And again, some of us are called to be that spearhead, but each of us can grab onto that spear because that's where the power is. And as we partner with those who are willing to be that spearhead through our prayer, through our giving, just through that encouragement, welcoming them back. Sometimes the church is good at sending workers, but we're not so good at receiving them back. And they come back and they feel isolated, lonely, not understood. And so I would encourage each of you, what is your role? If your role is to be that spearhead, be that point. But for many of us, it's going to be we are the ones that grab that shaft and through our prayer and our support. But that is not a small point, because the power is in that, grabbing that shaft.
Okay, so you'll see the next green question there. Is there a visible end to the Great Commission? The prayer of Matthew 24:14, that, you know, when will the end come? That question that is always the part, and for generations, in 1910, I don't know, I think it was George, or the 1910, with the Edinburgh Missions Conference, that hopefully within their generation that they would be able to reach into every people group. And so I put down a couple stats that are here. I'm an optimist by makeup, and Sam will always bring me back to the understanding the pessimistic reality. But the reality is, some of these are really good, but just like the Great Commission that was given, Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, to the ends of the earth, we're still reaching Jerusalem. I mean, they had a revival there that swept the city, and then it went into Judah and went into Samaria, went into the ends of the earth. But there's times in which, just like Albania, has to be reached again. And so when we're seeing this, I'll just give you some of the stats that they've been able to pull. Number one there, remaining task, 1980, 60% of population in the world lived in frontier people groups. So that's no known believer network that's happening, no church within the people. In 2023, 25% of the world's population lived in frontier people groups. So a good change that's there. And George will talk a little bit about that in the future. One of the greatest revivals we've experienced without even knowing that we've been experiencing it, of the amount of people coming into the kingdom. The second one there, there are 31 frontier people groups with 10 million people each. All are either Muslim or Hindu. So Bangladesh, Pakistan, India, some in China, but mainly in northern India. That's in 10 million within a whole group. So like Rajputs, whole people group and which has been very hostile to the gospel message or have not had people reaching into them. Number three there, the great injustice. 96% of workers go to reach people groups. So that's the four and five on your the kind of the green numbers. 3% to UPG, non-frontier. So part of that would be 3-2 and part of 1, and only 1% to frontier people groups. It's almost identical in money given to missions. Now, it's not to criticize the work going on in Colombia or Costa Rica or Canada. This is one of those things. It's kind of like, I'm trying to think of a good example. My kids in sports, there might be one that I really like, but like my daughter that swims, I don't really understand it. They just paddle really fast, and I look at the time to see who wins, you know. But I can't tell her if her stroke is good or not. But my son with his swing, I know exactly what's off. Okay, so I put it as like it's what I know and I understand. If our Foursquare movement would unreached people groups would be, it's like we know the swing. That will be our focus. We're good. It's not to say that the others aren't valuable, but it's an issue of priority. The ones that have never had the opportunity to hear the gospel should be a higher priority than those that have had that at least around them. Funny side tangent. I said I was raised in a Hindu family, but one time my dad asked me, he goes, well, what about those far-off tribes? I go, you're not one of them. You've watched my life. At that point, it was about 15 years. I go, this epistle you've read over and over. You've seen it many, many times. You can't play that line on me. There are plenty of people that have not, like the proverbial, don't know your left hand from your right. There are many of those. And so when you get down to this bottom here, the comparing 1900 to 2024, non-believers that knew a Christian, there was only 5.3 of non-believers would have known a Christian. That's now at 18.5. Still, that's less than 1 out of 5. So you run into 5 unbelievers, 4 of them will not know of a Christian. They couldn't identify a Christian that they know. So that's still a horrifically low stat. Number of cities with 1 million people, was it 20? Now it's at 618. Number of Pentecostals, almost 1 million in 1900. And that would have been what they would call kind of the latter, oh, it was before the latter rain. That was kind of late holiness, crying out for Pentecost, because we know the Azusa Street revival, those were 1906. But it's a small segment of people that are looking for that outpouring of the Spirit, the empowerment to all the nations. Now it's almost at 700 million. Languages in the New Testament, 227. Now it's at 2,400. No gospel access percentage of world population. Was it 54%? Now it's at 27%. So I'm the optimist. George and I will be on the optimist side. And then Sam will go, okay, you're still missing. There's 27. So, I mean, it's like a third of the population of the globe has no access to the gospel. That's a tragedy. It's inconceivable, but very conceivable at the same time. So those are just kind of remaining tasks. So I will give you another positive one. Listening to a lot of the guys doing Bible translation, they have met, and there's a lot, Wycliffe, Seed Company, many of those have done really well with translations. And they have right down New Testament translations, 2,400 here. But they said with AI, they're expecting that to quickly multiply to all major languages by the year 2033. Now, that you need to have the gospel in a language that is at least a close language that they can at least understand, or have somebody in their village that would understand, or they could hear if they're not able to read, but they're able to hear. We have to get because the transforming work is the good news. It's got to get in there. Now, I've learned with most people, I think the recent stat I read, that in radical Islamic areas, that a new believer may be baptized up to 10 times if it is by connected with mission organizations. But if they are baptized by a national indigenous leader, it's only once. And so the critical thing is, it's not to say that those mission organizations are not doing a great job of discipling, but there's something what happens when it becomes it's an indigenous people, and if it's a Mongolian, baptizing a Mongolian, you're coming into that family. They can recognize it. It's not something that's foreign to them. And so the critical piece is that we get the leaves in there, they unfurl, and then it begins to take root within their people. And so that would be the hope of this, is that that access. And the goal of it, we know that when the Jesus returns, it says that they will look upon him who they pierce, the people in Jerusalem. There are unbelievers. It's not, we're not looking for, 100% on this. But it's critical that the people of Turkmenistan, Abidjan, some of these others desperately need the good news of Jesus Christ. And in some of these parts, as they've heard or seen, even had visions, but they don't know how to apply that yet. And it takes flesh or somebody to work with them. I'll end with one part here, and then we're going to kind of turn this around to all of these guys to share. During COVID, I was watching on a Zoom call, and they were doing reaching into unreached people groups, and it was a German guy on that was doing a presentation. And he said because of COVID, he couldn't fly down. And it was, I think, in the nation of Chad is where he was talking about. And he was supposed to go down there for a baptism, and he couldn't fly. And so the people on the other Zoom, that other end of the Zoom that he was discipling, needed to be baptized. And he goes, well, I don't know who can baptize. So they just said, who's the oldest among you? And so the elder of the community that was the new believer was the one that got into the water with him. And he said it saved the movement that was there because it remained within their people. It didn't come in from outside. It came in through Zoom. So there was something that needed to be instructed, but then it quickly turned to being the people. And then he also empowered the elders of that village. So all of a sudden they were not just an elder in age and in wisdom, but now also in the church. So on the back of that page that's there, if you turn it over, you're going to have the missionary task. This is 2018, but as these guys are sharing some of the stories from around the world, and this is one I'd love for you to study, because the dark blue is like the dark it's the deep waters that just takes it, from a fishing perspective, just takes different tackle to be able to catch things. And so you'll see that we've done very good in evangelicals and other Christians in Latin America. In that top one, there's a saturation. The T, thankfully, has, like us with Brazil or us in some of these nations like Panama, thankfully the T has gotten to the reaches of that nation. But if you go one little sliver over India, and you've got deep blue there, and that would be culturally distant non-believers. So no one that's close even in culture that's in the kingdom of God. And so you'll see on that far side is about half that's there, in which we need to have creative ways to get into those people groups with the gospel. Now, my guess is it will not just come, or I know it won't come from the United States. It will come from many other nations around the world that have Acts 1:8 in their Bible, and they'll look and they go, I sense God saying to me, just like the road back to Jerusalem, those areas that they're looking at, they go, we feel this is our commission into. And so you see Muslim majority countries there, other in Asia. And you notice, like with China, and we find this a phenomenon, 1950s, they were wondering if Christianity was going to be stamped out in China just due to Mao and his persecution of Christians. But you'll see that light blue, it's like one people group away from being able, so very similar culture, sometimes same language, and it just has to be crossing a cultural divide that's still within the nation of China to be able to reach all of China. So that lighter blue is a lot better than the dark blue. Dark blue is you have no, there's no quick access to it. And so you'll see how we still have that kind of that outer ring that's there that needs to be reached. Okay. So George, why don't I start with you on this go round? And then we'll just kind of just pass it, and maybe we'll get to question and answer.
Okay. Let's kind of get practical for a moment. Quickly, let me just ask, how many of you are thinking about the possibility of serving in a different nation and possibly with an unreached people? Are any of you walking down that path? Okay, one here. Anybody else? Yes? Okay. Until death.
Okay. Yeah, so in Foursquare we have multiple levels of commitment. There is, short-term schemes, and then we have what we call midterm, which is anywhere from 1 month up to 2 years, and then after 2 years,
Yeah, many ways this can be done. Let me talk about the most fundamental entry point, and that is prayer. First of all, there are more people praying today than at any time in human history. The Lord's Prayer is quite probably, the words of the Lord's Prayer are the most repeated words in all of human history. The Lord's Prayer has been prayed hundreds, billions of times in the last 2,000 years since Jesus taught us that prayer. So, and now today, there are more people praying that prayer than have ever prayed that prayer. So your kingdom come. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. I'm working with a prayer movement. The Global Council of the Four Square Church, which is the leadership of all these 158 nations, has asked that we create a Four Square Global Prayer Network. So I'm a practical facilitator for that. And so we do global prayer calls. We do regional and smaller groupings of prayer calls. But our real goal is to activate prayer in the local church. Because many churches in the West now don't even have a regular prayer meeting. It's not part of the regular schedule and calendar. So I have a couple things that might be helpful to you. And the first one is an app called Bless Frontier Peoples. Actually, there's a footnote on the page that Kai was just on. I think it's the third page of your notes. There's a footnote, blessfrontierpeoples.org. But they also make an app. And the app will give you these 31 frontier people groups every day for a month. And then it'll repeat again for the next month. And so today we are praying for the Turks in Turkey, a group of 62 million Muslim people who are an unreached people group. By the way, the Four Square Church in Turkey is the largest evangelical church in Turkey. And that, but we have, that means we have about 30 churches in Turkey, or is it about 40 churches in Turkey, average maybe 15 to 20 people per church. That's the largest gospel preaching movement in Turkey. So 62 million Turks plus other ethnic background Muslim people. So prayer is really important, really, really important. So Bless Frontier Peoples, download the app, and every day one of these groups is going to pop up. A lot, you'll see India a lot, and that'll just help to remind you to pray. The other thing is I have on my phone two alarms that go off every day. The first one goes off at 10:37 in the morning. That is to remind, 9:37 in the morning. That is to remind me of Matthew 9:37. The harvest is ripe, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray the Lord of the harvest. So at 9:37 in the morning, when that beeper goes off, I pause and I say, Lord, we need workers in India. We need workers in Bangladesh, in Pakistan, in Nepal, in Bhutan, in Sri Lanka, and in Afghanistan. These are the countries that I am particularly focused on. Then my alarm goes off again at 2:08 in the afternoon. So that just happened a little while ago, or it will happen in a little while. At 2:08, I remember Psalms 2, verse 8, ask of me, and I will give you the nations as your inheritance. And so again, I pray, Lord, I just ask for these nations. I ask for these nations to bring glory to Jesus, to be brought to the feet of Jesus. And so these are practical things you can do with prayer. My first missions assignment was a prayer assignment. I was at a student-led service at Oral Roberts University. A speaker from Youth with a Mission named Floyd McClung came and presented information on God, on unreached peoples. This was 1979. At the end of that service, I was on my knees, sorting some things out about my future. And sometime in that moment, as I was praying, God said, pray for Managua. And I did not know what a Managua was, but I thought it might be a place. And I went back to my room. My roommate had a map. We looked, and we found that Managua was the capital of Nicaragua. So I began to pray for Managua. I've never been there, never made a missions trip to anywhere in Central America. I'm an Asia guy. That's all I know. And so, but I began to pray for the nation of Managua, which it was going through a political crisis as Cuban-backed people were taking over from a dictator. I won't tell it. That's it's there's a lot to that story, but I'll just stop there. How many of you have a nation that you pray for on a regular basis? Okay, what's your nation? Mexico. Okay, back here, what's your nation? You pray. Wow, wonderful. I'm glad you're praying for yourself. Who else? Who's got a nation they pray for on a regular basis? Yes, sir. Nigeria. And? Nigeria. And in the back? Many nations. Okay, you probably have a map somewhere, don't you? I just moved, and I used to have a glass top desk, and I could slide things under the glass to remind me of places that I pray for. And now I don't have a glass top desk, but I have a little clipboard with all the printed pictures of North Africa, Central Asia, South Asia. These are the countries I pray for. And because it's right in front of me every day when I sit down at my desk, it helps me to pray. Because I'm like, oh, look, a bird. You know, that's that's my prayer life. So I wanted to share that because I think underneath everything that we're talking about, without a movement of prayer, the spiritual powers that are dominating these people groups will not yield. So final thing, then I'll pass over. The stats that Kai just mentioned, in 1980, 60% of the population of the world lived in frontier people groups. These are these 31 big groups of 10 million and more. That means that statistically, that meant that 2.4 billion people in 1980 had no access to the gospel. 1980. Okay, fast forward to 2020. That's 40 years, right? Yeah, I think so. Okay, by the way, did I say population of the world 1980 was 4 billion or 4 to 4.1 billion people? So 60% of 4 billion people was 2.4 billion people. Fast forward 40 years. Have we made progress? Today, the number of unreached people in the world is still 2.4 billion people. Bummer. Oh, wait a minute. But the population has changed. Anybody know what the world population is today? It's 8 billion. It's double. So that means that 2.4 billion people are still unreached, but it's no longer 60% of the world. It's 25%. You know what that translates into? The greatest movement of evangelism that has ever happened in human history during our lifetimes. In the last 40 years, and I kind of missed it. I was just busy doing ministry. When I heard that, I said, actually, I've been living in the middle of it, and I'm still kind of blind sometimes. But it's happening. It's happening right now. God is on the move. And so I just want to share that to encourage you. Let's pray for the nations. And let's watch what God is about to do, and let's find out how we can participate. Linz.
I'm Lindsay. Hello. And I serve in Europe and in our Menica region. And I was just thinking, as George was talking about how necessary prayer is, not only to allow us to participate in the work that God is already doing, but also to be able to align our hearts and even the way that we do things to the Father's heart and to how he's doing things. And one of the things that I've learned, maybe specifically as I've served in the Muslim world in these last years, is the necessity of doing things like Jesus did. And I know that I've come to recognize that the strategy of Jesus was, I only do what I see the Father doing. And I only speak what he gives me to say. And that's really become the way that I operate as I'm moving in these places where they don't yet know his name. One of the greatest encouragements to me over these years has been coming to realize that this is not unfamiliar territory to Jesus. I had an experience in North Africa as I was working on learning Arabic. I was staying with a Muslim family, and it was some really good days and some really not good days, you know. And I remember one day in particular, I had just had a really discouraging day. I think somebody had said something to me like, you know, you still don't understand. And I was thinking, well, I understood that, you know, but just a really, somebody made a criticism of my Arabic, and I was really low that day. And I went back to my room in that family's home, in that Muslim family's home. And I just started crying out to the Lord, and he brought a passage to my mind from Philippians 2. You guys are familiar with it, but it's where it talks about what Jesus did for us. It says he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. For this reason also God highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name which is above every name, so that at the name of Jesus every knee will bow, of those who are in heaven and on the earth and under the earth, and that every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. And I remember thinking about, in that moment, thinking about what Jesus has done for me. He humbled himself, came in the likeness of man, came as a humble servant in obedience to the will of the Father. And now, because of his sacrifice, because of his humility, God has highly exalted him, and he is the name. There's no other name under heaven given to men by which we must be saved. It's the name of Jesus. And I realized in that humble place, it was like I started to identify in a very small way. I can't compare to what Jesus has done, but it was like, because in that moment I was feeling like I was being born into another culture. I couldn't speak the language, or at least they were telling me that I couldn't speak the language. You know, they had a 5-year-old daughter, and I couldn't speak nearly as well as their 5-year-old daughter. But yet I saw in that moment, like it was like being born into another culture. And I really did have to, it was a humbling place, you know. And then I saw my Jesus, and it was like, this is what Jesus has done for me. This is who I follow. And so I'm going to be willing to lay down my life and to do the same, so that others one day will exalt his name, that he would be highly exalted among this people as well. And I just share that story just again to say that Jesus is not unfamiliar with these places, these people. He knows them. He sees them. And he's calling us to be part of the work. What you guys shared, you touched on when Jesus looks out at the multitudes and says the harvest is ripe, but the workers are few. Pray to the Lord of the harvest. Before that, it says that he looks out. He saw the multitude, and he had compassion. And I think that it's really important to remember that that call to us to lift our eyes and see the harvest came from a place of compassion. God's heart is so great for those that don't yet know him. And he is actively working to draw them to himself. And now he's calling us to lift our eyes with him. Jesus is never out of the picture, but to lift our eyes with him and see the harvest and begin to cry out and see how the Lord would have us participate. So yeah, let's do it.
Hi. Back in 2012, the Global Family gathered together for a global summit in Phoenix, Arizona. And there was a couple of things that we did there at the time, but one most important thing that we agreed upon was the time was ripe. It was something that the Lord was leading the whole movement into, that the time was ripe for a total change in the relationship between the U.S. church and the global family. Up to that point, it was FMI and the U.S. church that led the way in the gathering of the harvest around the world. But Pastor Glenn Burris at the time, you know, felt that very strongly, and so did the global family, that we had to change that relationship from parenting to partnership. And that was key. Now, of course, that was a statement, a declaration of intent in the spirit. And it's taken all these years to actually start implementing this process. It's not by definition that happens. It goes through a process. 9 years ago, for instance, Ethan Özbek, which is the national leader of Turkey, the leader of the Menaka region, which already was specified what it means, made a Macedonian call, you know, following on the footsteps of Paul and his missionary trip. And he asked for Latin Americans to come to the Dominican region, mostly because they were well accepted, because we look alike them. You know, I've been in close contact with Egyptians, and they think I'm Egyptian. And they started to talk to me in Egyptian, and I don't understand a word. But the same happens to them. They are amongst us, and people start talking to them in Spanish, and they don't have a clue. And it's so true. And so Ethan made the Macedonian call to us. But it was up to just a few couple years later that finally we have been able to get engaged into making this happen. And Sam has been engaged in training groups of Latin Americans to actually, through the process of learning about Islam and how to evangelize Islam, you know, Muslims and whatever, and actually taking a couple of groups over there to Turkey and Morocco as well. So it's starting to happen. Now also the FMI missionary for the regions of Latin America, he's also been taking national leaders into that region to engage them. And it's already happening. But no matter how is it happening, it's not fast enough. In fact, for the first year, this year, we in our global spiritual report, which is something similar to what you saw in the business report for the U.S. Well, we have something similar, mostly on the spiritual report, asking them what's happening on the UPG or on rich people groups. Very, very few answers, because there's a lack of definition, understanding of what the task is ahead. Doesn't mean that there's more people than the U.S. church involved in reaching out to the unreached people groups. It's just that they don't know how to identify them or clearly align them with what you're talking about. Case in point, I was coming to the convention just 2 days before I came to convention. I was checking on the Facebook page of one of our national leaders in South America. And here's this guy in a picture with this family. He said, well, we are here with the family so-and-so. They're headed for a country in the Dominican region. They're going to be, joining a ministry there and doing some missionary work there. And say, so I contacted this guy. I said, have you talked to the FMI people or to the Southeast, the Dominican region leaders? No. He said, oh, great. Would you mind if we connect in connection and talk about that? I said, okay, great. But no thought about doing this. Now, fast forward. This morning, I was in a meeting with a missions director from another country and with the FMI missionary for the area as well. And we were talking because there was one particular effort to try to reach to get this nation involved in the Menaka region as well. And while we are talking, the national leader of the missions says, oh, by the way, we have this family in this other country in the Menaka region. He said, what are they doing there? I said, well, they're planning a church, but they own a barber shop. So they're residents of this country. So, oh, great. And are they related to First Square? No. So we contacted the person right away, and he's going to make contacts with the national leader of Turkey. So this is happening. It's just people doing it without connecting. Now, the uphill battle is to make sure that we connect, because there's already resources there, especially for the follow-up, the pastoring of these people, the shepherding. It's important. You're feeling alone there on the field. So this is my role. My role is to connect, to try to help the missionaries in the area connect with efforts already happening, because they are happening. The question is, how do we connect to make sure it's happening in a more effective way? Okay, so, cheer up, because the Lord is doing mighty things. Sometimes we feel we are alone, but that's not really true. God is doing mighty things through many other nations as well. But I hope that more and more people will be aligned with understanding what we're doing together and make it better. Okay?
Okay. You know, we've talked a lot about statistics and numbers, but it really comes, down to God's heart for individuals. And one person put it this way, that there are, particularly in the Muslim world, there are more Muslims seeking to know Jesus, and there are those who are seeking to tell them about Jesus. And I think of this particularly, years ago we had this ministry in this little island in Indonesia that was maybe 2 square miles. It was a remote island, no electricity, no running water. We would eat, their houses were built over the stilts, over the bay, and we would actually, after we eat, we'd put the rice between the slits in the floor. But half the island was animist, half were Muslims. And so we began to work among the animists. But this one young Muslim lady began coming to our meetings. And then the other Muslims of the island got mad at the father for allowing his daughter to come to our meetings. He got so mad at the other Muslims of the island telling him how to run his family that he came to our meetings. And he accepted the Lord. And his name was Pak Munil. But less than a year after he came to know the Lord, he passed away. And we can think about the millions and the billions who have not heard the gospel. But of all the millions and the major cities and all these things, God knew Pak Munil by name. And he arranged it that on this little, small, remote island, that this illiterate fisherman who could barely make enough money to feed his family, no importance in the sight of this world, had a chance to hear the gospel before he passed away. And so we can talk about these things, but that's what it boils down to. God's heart, God's love for individuals. You know, in each of our communities, there are Pak Munils. There are individuals that maybe have come from pumping your gas and they came from Pakistan. Or the Uber driver from Bangladesh. They have no opportunity to hear the gospel. But God knows them by name. He loves them and cares for them. So I just challenge you to think about and to pray about who is the Pak Munil in your life. That individual that if you don't share with him, maybe has no Christian relatives, no Christian friends. And then just one very practical thing I would really challenge you with. I forget the exact statistics, but something like 80% of all international students never make it into an American home the entire time they're here. China is the number one sender of international students to the United States. I'm not sure if it's still true, but a number of years ago, Saudi Arabia was the fourth largest sender of international students, where it's illegal even to bring your own private Bible. Think about, I would really challenge you this next Christmas, next Thanksgiving, just go down, and it doesn't have to be a major university, it can be a community college. And just say, we have 3 or 4 families in our church that are willing to host 2 or 3 international students. Good to do it by at least 2 or 3 so they don't feel lonely. and say, we have these families. And it becomes just a natural way to share the gospel. I was working with one Muslim young man, and he said, I know why you Christians put lights on the Christmas tree. And I had to pretend like I knew. So I said, well, of course I know, but why do you think? And he said, because Jesus is the light of the world. Good answer. But it can become just a very natural way to share the gospel because they're in your house for Christmas. And so this is why we celebrate Christmas. This is why we have a nativity set. This is why we have Thanksgiving. And so I just challenge you that there is ways. You know, people often say, what's the key to reaching Muslims? And we try to think of some clever theological argument that's going to, we just give them this thing and they're going to come. Recently I was reading a book called Saved by Faith and Hospitality. And I think the key is hospitality. inviting people into your life and then sharing your life with Jesus with them. It's not the cleverness of your argument or that you can out-argue a Buddhist or a Muslim or a Hindu, but are you willing to allow them into your life and then sharing your life and what it means as you as a believer?
Yeah, we're at that time to go get food and naps. So let's do this. We have all of your emails in the back. Commitment to you is that we'll get an email to you with a lot of the contact parts, some of the tools that are here that this team is working on. And then if you can just take this back into our churches, if you're national leaders and others, that this becomes a priority, almost like if you were to set a table, make sure the unreached people groups are at your table. So if that's you're creating a missions budget, if that's you're looking to take on a new worker, and maybe working with George and you just go, can help me, one of these 31 that are on my app that keep popping up, how do I pray for them? How do I connect with them? Is there somebody that's going over there? How can I join with them? Is there national churches that are already functioning in that area? If you become inquisitive, you'll find answers. Okay, long time ago, I got one of those YWAM prayer journals, and every day was a different prayer group. And it messes with you when you're setting your plans for the day and then you're seeing, oh, only 28 million people lost in Malaysia. You know, it affects you. And so if you put that as a priority in your life, the people that are around you, it'll naturally affect our Foursquare movement, our goal, whether this just becomes like the Moravians were to prayer and they were to missions. We'd love the unreached people groups to be that as it relates to prayer and to the unreached as it relates to people groups. Because that whole group of kind of northern India into Pakistan and Bangladesh, it's just a sweet spot. And we need a lot of creative ways to get the good news of Jesus Christ in there. So, and my little tea illustration will end with this. So when you pour in, now it is just the sweet, beautiful, oh. So that the should be the Lord saying, my people that are called by my name have surrendered, and it is phenomenal tea. So if you want to sip, you can come sip out of mine. You are dismissed, and make sure your emails and stuff are back there on that thing.